your knees are going to hurt all the time. And by the end of it, you'll have to pee 3 times a night. That's really all I got for you. Happy birthday, many happy returns, and go get them, man. Yeah. Hello and welcome to the Plugged In Podcast, a weekly news show all about the future of transportation. I'm Patrick George, Editor-in-Chief of Inside EVs.
And I'm Tim Levin, Senior Editor at Inside EVs. On this week's show, General Motors announces some big future technology plans, including eyes-off autonomous driving, LiDAR, and robots. Plus, Rivian has broken into the e-bike game with Also, and I got to ride this vehicle. I got to take a look at it, so I will tell you all about it. Plus, later in the show, Patrick talks to Horse Powertrain, which is doing some really innovative stuff with gas engines that could make your next EV run a little farther. But first, Patrick, how are things since I saw you literally like 45 minutes ago?
Yeah, the last 45 minutes have been really busy and exciting, literally writing the script for this episode, because, yeah, like for the two items that you just mentioned, that stuff all dropped like today as we record this. So yeah. It's been a very busy day. I am in bad need of a nap and I'm going to try really hard to stay awake during this episode. But how about you, man? How was your subway ride? How was that exercise in mobility right there?
It was good. It was good. Yeah, I'm in New York, which I miss dearly. And honestly, the subway is one of those things where like it's very nostalgic, even though it is crowded and hot and smelly sometimes. I get on and I'm like, oh, I like being home. But
so you say that now. You say that now, but then like do it enough, and you know, no, God bless the MTA. Like they are doing the Lord's work. I mean, not they're not good at it, but I'm glad we have it. You know,
but they're doing it.
But they're doing it. Yeah, it's you know.
Yeah,
we commend them for that. You having a good time in New York though?
Yeah, I'm good. It's been busy. There's been enough going on at work that I've kind of forgotten about the crisis that I've been going through about turning 30 tomorrow. So,
oh wow! I actually didn't know that. Happy early birthday! Are you
Thank
in a crisis
you.
Mode? You're dude. I turned 40
a
this
little
year.
Bit.
You're a baby. You got this, man. Yeah, this is great.
Yeah. Any advice? Any advice for a young man about to become an old man?
What advice do I have for you? I don't know. First, your 30s is like I don't know, that should be like your best decade because like you are still young and can do stuff and probably have like the earning power and experience to like
yes.
do it right. Your knees are going to hurt all the time. And by the end of it, you'll have to pee 3 times a night. That's really all I got for you. Happy birthday, many happy returns, and go get them, man. Yeah.
Thanks. Awesome. Yeah. Now I'm really looking forward to that. Really looking forward to this next decade.
It's largely downhill from here. I'm sorry to tell you that. Cool. Well, let's get
but
into
with
some
that.
Stuff. With that,
yeah.
Let's talk about cars and autonomy and mobility.
Yeah. Have you heard cars? Have you heard they're electric now?
No one knows where they come from or how they're made. But no, it has been a busy day around here, which is why Tim and I are like borderline delirious. I started today at an event here in New York City called GM Forward, where a bunch of executives, including CEO Mary Barra, dove into what I could best describe as like the high tech future for the whole company. You know, they had a pretty good Q3 earnings result. They had a really outstanding run of EV sales in the last 3 months, thanks to people rushing out to buy before the tax credits ended. And, you know, they're kind of dialing back their EV plans a little bit at GM. But I think this event was put on to be like, no, we're not backing off on future tech stuff. Like, we are still serious about what's next. So they covered a lot of things today. Autonomous vehicles, next generation batteries, AI, new electrical architectures for both EVs and gas vehicles. It had me running around a lot. I should have worn more comfortable footwear. But yeah, exciting day for GM.
Yeah, there was a lot of news. What do you think was the most important or what stuck out to you the most about all the stuff that GM announced today?
Yeah, certainly like in like the near term, like by far, it was that they are going to add what's called eyes off functionality to Super Cruise. And what that means mm-hmm. is, you know, right now you get on Super Cruise, you and I have used it. It's excellent. It's on about 24 GM cars, and that lets you take your hands off the wheel on over 750,000 miles of mapped highways in the United States. And you can keep your hands off the wheel as long as you monitor the road ahead and pay attention to the car itself and step in when you need to. But 3 years from now, GM says you won't even need to do that stuff. Upgraded Super Cruise, it's coming to the Cadillac Escalade IQ, the electric one, first. It'll do the highway driving for you while your eyes are off the road and like doing other stuff, like reading a book or on your phone or whatever. And to prove it, they had the White Lotus playing inside the car.
Oh, no way. So it gets like they're going to have HBO or something.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like on the giant screen. They're playing the White Lotus, which is really sick. Yeah.
Which season?
Yeah. Oh, the most recent one. The one with Parker Posey and Walton Goggins from Righteous Gemstones.
Nice. I have a feeling I know what scene or scenes they weren't playing on the screen.
I wondered that too, and I was kind of like, I'm really glad they didn't pick like the Hunting Wives or something to demonstrate what this thing can do. But anyway, it's an exciting leap forward in autonomy for sure for GM.
Yeah, and for some context here, I mean, eyes off driving is kind of the next step, the next frontier in driving assistance for cars. You know, it's kind of like, it's really what separates something that's a driver assistance system that you have to pay attention to something that is really more like an autonomous vehicle, even if it's just in some situations like on the highway. And so in North America, at least, it's only Mercedes that offers that kind of system, and it's called Drive Pilot, and you can only use it in California and Nevada, only under very specific circumstances on the highway. But it does the same thing. It means that you can look away from the road when it's on, and you can like use the screen and play games and watch TV and stuff.
Yeah, and that is a big leap over what we're doing now. And to do that, you know, you need the hardware for it, is what GM is saying. And in this case, the hardware is LiDAR. Laser-based radar will be added to the Escalade IQ. It's like a little hump on top of the roof of the car, like above the windshield. And that's going to add LiDAR to the camera and radar sensors that are already there for Super Cruise. And this gives GM like a big leg up on its driverless technology and driverless safety. Also, by the way, when it's on, there are these turquoise lights like on the bumper and the mirrors that kind of show it's engaged, and you have like a glowing turquoise light inside the vehicle. So people outside will know that it's running basically like an autonomous vehicle, which is also what Mercedes-Benz does too. So that's kind of neat to see.
Yeah, that turquoise lighting is kind of becoming like the standard for, you know, showing that your car is operating autonomously.
Yeah, and that's not a regulation or anything. Like, we'll get to that in a second. That's just kind of what everybody has sort of accepted that they're doing for now. GM's not saying who its LiDAR supplier is yet. You know, this is a really complicated system. It's really rarely made in-house by car companies. I think a couple of Chinese automakers make their own LiDAR. But, you know, without naming Tesla directly, like, GM kind of threw some shade on Tesla's approach to camera-only autonomous driving. They were saying that it was never really under consideration because they don't consider it safe enough. And I have this great quote from Barish Sethnak, who is one of their top software executives, and he said, "We will not count on a human to take over to be safe. That's a false expectation. It's not a viable product. This will be able to handle cases you can handle." And that means like this should be able to do what a human driver could do, except faster and better. And I like that they're pointing out that they need less human interventions for this system, because like Super Cruise, as you know, is very good. But I have still had a few times using it where like up sudden disengagement, like pay attention, like take over, and you better be paying attention. I've had a few more of those with Tesla Autopilot on the highway, but like that's the definition of a level 2 system. You better be ready to take over, you know, at a moment's notice. And level 3, in theory, should eliminate that. So last thing I'll add is this starts on the Escalade IQ, but Mary Barra says it's going to spread very quickly across the GM lineup pretty soon.
Yeah, I'm curious what they mean by that, by the, you know, it has a human, we won't count on a human to take over, because obviously until it's like point to point goes anywhere, there are going to be places where, you know, when you're leaving the highway, that sort of thing, when you're getting on the highway, there's going to have to be a handoff between the human and the car. So we'll see what they mean by that. But at least it sounds like a big jump over the sorts of systems that are available now. Because like the Mercedes one, you do have to sometimes, if you exceed the speed limit or whatever that it works under, they'll give you like 10 seconds to get back in control. So yeah, interesting to see that. How much will this cost? That's the big question. How much is what I think they used to call this Ultra Cruise. Now it's not that. It's just better Super Cruise. How much is the level
Super
3 Super Cruise going
to... I believe. That's not that extra name, no.
Extra Super Cruise. How much is it going to cost?
That's the fun part, Tim. We don't know. They're being really cagey on a lot of those details, including, is this system going to cover all of the highways that like normal conventional Super Cruise can do now? Like, they're just saying it's for highway driving only. Eventually, they want to expand this to urban areas, like very slowly, which besides Tesla, like, nobody's doing hands off in urban areas. But they're not really even saying like where it's going to be fully covered right now. So we can't expect that this thing will go eyes off on every highway that Super Cruise can do. Like, I'd be kind of surprised if that's the case, but we'll find out. And I don't know if it's going to be an equipment package on Escalade IQ or something you pay for or whatever. Like, they're not giving out any of those details. And we tried. So there is one potential hang up when it comes to the Escalade IQ and the rest of the GM lineup getting this like really advanced, eyes off system. It's that there is no national set of regulations governing, that kind of autonomous driving. That's why that Mercedes operates only in California and Nevada. They're the only states that like kind of allow this. And so GM wants to roll this out everywhere. And so we asked, like, okay, like, what are you doing if there's no rules here? And they were really cagey on the subject. They're like, well, some states allow it, some states don't, and we'll see what happens. And I guess their AV lobbyists are going to be like working in force the next 3 years to get, you know, national approval for this sort of thing. But unless that happens, like, this is not going to go anywhere.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of feel like if any car company can put the screws on the government to like, I mean, not put the screws, but if any car company can like convince the government to do something about autonomous cars, like, it might end up being GM or GM and Ford and all them getting together and doing this.
Yes. Someone's got to it at some point.
So what else, there's other news from today. What else do you want to highlight? Obviously, it seems like they're making big strides on the autonomous front. What else has GM announced today that you want to talk about?
Yeah, there's a lot. It was a lot of stuff. Like I said, they're doing a new electrical architecture that will power EVs and their ICE vehicles, which I know sounds like deeply unsexy, but like is really important. We're talking about the underlying electrical framework of the car. And when we did the podcast with Rivian's CEO, RJ Scaringe, he had this great explanation for why car makers are moving away from that conventional like setup for electrical architectures, which is like a bunch of piecemeal systems like your fuel injection system, your brake controller, you know, all these different little disconnected modules that control the different functions of a car. Now they're moving like a unified system. This is GM's take on that, but it's set up in a way that's going to work with more than just EVs. Like, they want this across their whole portfolio, a unified software and electrical system. And that, and when you think about, like, that's a lot of freaking cars, right? Like, that's like subcompact gas cars that they sell in like Latin America all the way up to like the Escalade IQ. So, a pretty diverse set of needs that they want to unify under one roof. And we could do a whole podcast episode on that. And I kind of actually want to now. So we'll see.
Yeah, maybe we should. Yeah, this was cool because, I mean, why is it important? You know, they're basically consolidating the amount of ECUs. Like, a normal car would have like 100 different little computers that control different things. GM is consolidating that, and that's what other car companies are doing too. They said today that they kind of had already started doing that. Like, a few years ago, they had a new architecture that was a little simpler, and now this is like the next, a big jump forward. And they said that it'll allow for 10 times the software updates, which, you know, that just goes to show, like, this is what it means for the consumer, right? Is like more software updates, more frequently, and probably better ones too.
I obviously this isn't a gas car podcast, so we're talking about gas engines later on it, but like from an engineering perspective, I'm actually super interested to hear how they're going to make this work for gas cars. Like, I'm just curious there, because this is a very EV inherent idea, but they want all the stuff you mentioned, like for software updates, OTA updates for their gas cars too. And just very quickly, like, Ford ran into problems. They were trying to do over the air updates for gas cars, and like, you kill the battery when the thing clicks on if it takes a while to do that. So I was like, what's your workaround to make all this high tech stuff work on a gas vehicle? We have a solution. We're not going to talk about it yet. So fun to see them retrofit that. But a lot of fascinating stuff around.
Yeah. So there were two other pieces of news today. Why don't we run through, I want to move on to also, because I'm really excited about that. And I'm excited to tell you about it, but there were two other pieces of news from GM. Why don't you run through those real quick?
Yeah, very quickly. They're going to be adding Gemini AI, which is Google's AI system. They're going to be adding that as like a very conversational voice assistant to their cars pretty soon, which is great. It's kind of like, what's a great steakhouse in the area or something? Now your car will tell you, which is a nice evolution for voice controls. And they're also doing more robots.
Or be my girlfriend. Cadillac, please be my girlfriend.
Yeah, that's terrifying. I was listening to Pivot this week, and they call that synthetic relationships. And I pray to God I never have to hear that ever again, but I know that I'm young enough that I probably will. And terrifying. So don't try to date
clear,
your Cadillac.
They didn't talk about that. This is not GM approved.
I mean, I didn't bring it up. If you want to call some folks over there and ask about dating your Cadillac, that's between you and the Lord or somebody, man. Finally, General Motors is also working on something, more robots, their factories, called Collaborative Robotic Systems, or COBOTs. And these are more like a robotic arm on a platform, kind of, that are going to help GM assemble its cars of the future more and more.
Very cool.
Yeah. Not a humanoid robot. They were very clear that it's going to help humans and not augment them. And I also think if they came out with like the Chevy or Cadillac version of Optimus, they would have had like the biggest shit fit ever from the United Auto Workers Union on their hands. So they're smart enough to avoid that today. Anyway, Tim, that was my day. How was your day? You also had to work on some interesting stuff, didn't you?
Yeah. I'm excited to finally talk about this. I teased it last week. Now we can actually talk about the new also e-bike. So this is that e-bike and micromobility startup that started as this kind of secret project within Rivian. Then they spun it out. It came out of stealth. This year, they have a bunch of funding for it. And I saw the new e-bike, and it's pretty cool. It is basically like the Rivian of e-bikes, essentially. I'll put it to you the way that Chris Yu, also's president, told it to me. He was like, me and RJ, we were talking about this several years ago, and we were thinking, why doesn't the kind of Rivian magic, quote unquote, exist for things that aren't cars, for things that are e-bikes? And that's kind of what they tried to do here, is, you know, take reimagine the e-bike from the ground up in the same way that Rivian and Tesla and some of these Chinese car companies did for cars. They're like, what if we just threw out everything you know about e-bikes? You know, most of them are, you know, fundamentally just a regular bike with like a motor attached to it. What if we did what Rivian did and we start from scratch, build all the software, build all the hardware, design everything in house? And that's what it is. And it's really cool. And I will say I asked one of the reps there. I was trying to just ask her a question, like, are you also with the PR team or something? And you just can't utter the word also in that office. I asked if they have that problem, and she was like, yeah, we have a whole whiteboard of alternative ways to say the word also, like in addition to, and it must be a trip working there.
I feel like they could have run with this idea and had like the software platform is called what and the hardware motors are called which, and like had this like whole like who's on first thing that no one would understand. This is super fascinating to me, because a lot of car makers like talk a big game about mobility and micromobility and stuff like that, but they never really do anything with it besides put out a press release or a concept car. But they're actually selling this stuff, and there's two that are coming out in the initial phase, right?
Yeah, no, this and That's a good point. You know, this is not just like a white labeled e-bike like some other car companies have made, where they just take another e-bike and just slap like the Ford or the Porsche logo on it.
This is
truly designed by them. And it looks really legit. So they're launching with the TMB is the bike, Transcendent Mobility Bike.
That rules.
TMB is the e-bike, and the TMQ is a quad, which was kind of their like one more thing moment. So they have a delivery van style version of that quad that's kind of like, if you live in New York or probably some other cities, you see these things, similar types of vehicles already going around in bike lanes, delivering packages. They're going to sell a bunch of those to Amazon starting next year. And then they were like, well, we made that. And everybody who was working on it was like, how can I buy one of these? Like, can we make a quad for regular people? And so they ended up making also a quad for consumers that's smaller. It's kind of like a little electric ATV in a way. And it has a big bin in the back with some seats. So you could imagine, like, you know, you can take a couple of kids in that, or you could go do your Costco run or something.
This is so cool, man. Like, there are like folks in the neighborhood I live that, like, I see like some seniors and people like that that'll like run errands in their little gas cars and stuff. And it's like, man, this would be such a better alternative on so many use cases.
Yeah.
But like, let's start with the one you got to test. You got to take the TMB for a spin, and like, what'd you think?
Yeah, I was really impressed. I kind of came in and I was unsure, like, what does it mean, right, to do the Rivian of e-bikes? Does the e-bike really need to be reinvented from the ground up? Like, I wasn't sure really what they could actually do with it, and they did a lot. So just like a Rivian or just like a Tesla, the thing wakes up when you walk up to it with your smartphone. It like knows it's you. It knows all your settings, that kind of thing. There is a very impressive little touchscreen, circular touchscreen mounted up by the handlebars. That's like, honestly, way slicker and way more pretty and way easier to use than like a lot of cars we drive. You know, it just feels like that kind of Silicon Valley tech product. It's really easy to swipe and stuff and just looks really good. It should also get over-the-air updates, just like a Rivian or a Tesla does. So they described it as like they made a sort of mini version of a zonal architecture, like we were just talking about, where they designed all the computers and all the software so that it can be updated. And there was a few things that really stuck out to me. One I'll just mention is like it has a navigation feature in it. So it pairs to your phone. It'll have turn-by-turn directions in the screen. And the thing that really stuck out to me is it even adjusts your ETA and your estimated range based on like what pedal assist level you're in. So they kind of just thought about everything in a way that Rivian and Tesla do. And like a lot of car companies don't even have that kind of level of, you know, intentionality with their products.
It's a lot of like EV approaches, but shrunk down. You're talking about like totally. OTA updates and these like range estimates and things. Like, this is really clever. And but it's not just software either, right? Like, it's the way they built this bike sounds like really slick.
So it has, its battery has R1 cells in it. You could take the battery, you can use it. You could take the battery out. You can use it to like charge devices when you're camping or whatever. This thing has regenerative braking, which they say increases the range by 25%. It has this super powerful motor. They say it has more torque than any other e-bike on the market. And one thing that really kind of blew me away about the hardware on this bike, and if you're watching this on YouTube, we'll have some B-roll here to show you what I'm really talking about.
Oh, yeah. Very, very, very quickly. Let me just like shameless self-promotion. Tim has a whole test of this bike on our YouTube channel, and you should go watch it because he knocked it out of the park. Yeah. So
thanks.
Sorry about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So you basically the part where like if you imagine where the seat goes in, that component can completely detach from the bike and be replaced. So you just hit a button in the touchscreen, that thing pops out. And it means that you can basically turn this into like a bunch of different bikes. So they'll have one of those that has a rack on the back that turns it into like a cargo bike. You can add some seats. You can put on like this moped style, like longer seat if you just want to kind of kick back and use the throttle. So that was really cool. It doesn't require any tools. You just click this button and you can like change the complete character of the bike. And then the last thing I'll say is just like how it rides. It was really fun. They have what they say is the highest pedal assist level of any bike on the market. It'll 10x the effort you put in. Most apparently only do like 4x. So you can get to 28 miles an hour really easily just by pedaling. So overall, yeah, super impressed by this bike.
You kind of sold me on one, actually. sorry, so what's one of these guys going to put me out? Let's talk dollars and cents, Tim.
Yeah, so a launch edition bike. This thing's coming out next year, by the way. The launch edition is $4,500. That will be the first one to go on sale in the spring of 2026. And then there is a base model going on sale later next year that's going to be, they say, under $4,000. We don't know exactly how much.
Wow. Yeah, is that, I mean, that sounds reasonable. I don't know anything about e-bikes because, like, yeah. I don't have the courage to ride one here in New York City because I'm going to get hit by a bus. But is that a good price for one?
Yes, I think it is. I think it is definitely, like, it's hard to say it's, you know, affordable or anything like that because there are definitely e-bikes that you can get for less. There are definitely e-bikes that you can also get for a lot more.
I'm sure they're all over the place, yeah.
Yeah, there are e-bikes that cost $7,000, $8,000, $10,000, $12,000. And so for like a high-end e-bike that has all this really thoughtful, all these really thoughtful features, level of software they put in this thing, I think it's a pretty fair price. But yeah, not super cheap by any means.
All right. Well, this is really exciting. I'm super intrigued to see where Rivian takes this next. Anything you want to add in closing about also what they got coming?
Yeah. I mean, not really. The thing is, I feel like I'm not doing it justice in the way that there is just like a lot that this company has worked on. So I guess what I'd say is go check out our article on InsideEVs.com. Go check out the YouTube video if you want to learn more about it, because I go in depth on a lot of stuff that we couldn't cover here. So go check that out.
Nice. Very good. We're all going to get also bikes next year. I'm going to expense them.
Yeah, no, honestly, and we can put this in the episode too. Like when I left, I was pretty convinced that I'm going to go buy one.
Yeah.
And then because I was just like really enamored by this thing, the way that they thought through everything. And I'm kind of stealing this from Chris, from the president of the company. He was like, I imagine this is going to be kind of like when people first drove Teslas, right? Like they didn't know that a car could be so cool. And that's kind of how I felt with the e-bike. And then I got home and I kind of mulled it over for a day. And I was like, I don't have $4,000 to spend on an e-bike. Like, what am I?
Yeah.
Who am I kidding?
But this somebody can happen does. At some of these.
I think a lot of people will really like it.
This could happen at some of these events. You know, Mac went to the Rivian R2 debut last year and he was like, yeah, I put a deposit down on one. I was like, I sent you to cover it. He's like, yeah, well,
yeah.
What are you going to do? All right. For our next segment, we have an interview about something we don't often cover here on the Inside EVs podcast, and that's gas engines. No, we're not changing our focus, but lately it's been clear that gas engines might be sticking around a little longer than expected. And one company I find super interesting as of late is Horse Powertrain. It's a joint venture between France's Renault and China's Geely Group that's trying to make cleaner, better gas engines from the ground up. And even ones that are more optimized for hybrids and extended range electric vehicles than the gas engines we have now. Now, they're actually really clear-eyed about the future needing to be all electric and zero emission, and they want to do a better job of getting there. So, I think they're up to some cool stuff. And so here is my interview with Horse Powertrain CEO, Mattias Giannini. Today on the Plugged In podcast, we're talking about something that we don't often talk about, gas engines. But our next guest leads a very interesting and innovative initiative that promises to make gas engines better and cleaner, and it might have some big implications for your next EV or hybrid. I'm joined by Mattias Giannini, the CEO of Horse Powertrain. Mattias, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Well, thanks for having me. It's really exciting to be here talking about something that we're so passionate about at Horse Powertrain. Thank you.
For sure. So this is definitely something that came onto my radar earlier this year. So this is a very new company, new initiative, and it really hasn't hit like, you know, critical mass in terms of attention, especially in the US yet. But what is Horse Powertrain and what is the company's origin story?
So horsepower train is, you're absolutely right. It is a one-of-a-kind, unique, new company, I would say. We're incorporated last year. We're just a little over 1 year old, but we're not new by any means. We have more than 125 years of heritage that we bring with us. It's a company, it's a joint venture that was formed from the carve-out of all the powertrain business on one side from Renault Group, and from the other side, Geely Group, which involves also Volvo cars. So just think about this. Renault Group, all the Renault brands, all the Geely brands, every Volvo car running in the world, they decided that they needed to have a specific focus on their transformation towards EVs. But at the same time, they also had the vision that combustion engines are going to be here for a very, very, very long time. And we better have somebody really focusing on developing the next generation technologies, taking care of that so that our products can continue to have the latest and greatest technologies in terms of hybrids and ICE engines. So they carved out everything, all the people, all the factories, all the IP, and put into this incredible company called Horsepower Train. Since then, we have started branching out and offering our solutions to basically every OEM in the industry, because everybody is going through the same challenge. So it's really, really exciting.
Yeah, it's interesting to me because you think of Geely Group and also, you know, Renault in Europe. These are two very big companies that are making huge pushes towards electrification and EVs. So why form a new a gas engine initiative?
For exactly that reason, because if you think about it, so our the core belief of our company of Horsepower Trains is we believe in the transition to net zero, but we also believe that there's many roads to get there. That just following the one road, which is EVs, which again, we're very supportive, just won't be enough. If you look at some of the numbers in 2040, as far as 2040, 6 out of 10 vehicles, new vehicles produced, will still have some sort of an engine, combustion engine on it in some sort of shape or form, ICE, hybrid, plug-in hybrid, range extender, some type of engine. So the question is, what do we do with those? Yes, we have to continue to push the acceleration towards EVs, but what do we do with the other half? That's 1 billion vehicles on the road in that time frame with some sort of engines. And so what the companies, the founding companies thought about, and you see that dialogue now taking place everywhere, even in Europe, where the legislators are a little bit tougher, the dialogue is, yes, we're going to need those technologies, and we can't just leave those technologies getting older and older and older, more and more inefficient. Somebody's got to work on it. And that's what we're doing.
One thing that I find really interesting about Horsepower Train, and like probably most journalists in my field, I started covering ICE engines and then branched into what's next. But your engines are designed differently. It sounds like your focus is creating something that reduces CO2 from the ground up. It also reduces complexity. And that's not always the case with other engine development programs. So tell us, like, what makes your engine special from everything else out there?
Thank you, Patrick. Absolutely. You're absolutely correct. So being a unique company that's here to support all the OEMs really in the industry, we couldn't just continue to develop products that are tailored to one particular OEM, in this case, to our founding shareholders, which is the way that engines have been designed and manufactured forever. Every OEM design manufactured their own. So being this unique company here to support everybody, we had to start thinking about not only developing the latest generation, the most efficient, fuel efficient, CO2 efficient engine, performance driven engines, but also do it in a way that is easy to integrate into the different architectures. And that's what we're doing. So on one hand, we continue to work on solutions, and by the way, from the beginning of the company, we can cover more than 80% of the world with the products that we inherited from our shareholders when the company was born. So we already have a lineup of products that we can offer to OEMs.
I was going to say, are these clean sheet designs you're using, or are these adapted from existing Renault or Geely Group ICE engines?
Both cases, and that's exactly what I was going to have. Obviously, with being just 1 year old company, we have a lot of the, let's say, heritage products that we used to supply to Renault, to Geely, to Volvo, that we can easily adapt in the new generations to other OEMs as well. But what's going to be the game changer here is the development of the new more modular, more compact, more powerful, more efficient engines that we are focusing on to be very easy to integrate to basically any OEM in the world. And we are already, we have been developing those. We have examples of applications going to market pretty soon. And the most exciting for me is something that nobody else is doing, is our belief that this future hybrid products, they should be developed not for a traditional combustion type car, which has been the way the hybrids worked forever. You start with a combustion car and you start plugging motors and inverters and things to it. Next thing you know, you have a hybrid. We believe we have to develop products that we can put in a BEV. So imagine if tomorrow, and that's my biggest hope and belief, we could allow the OEMs, we could enable the OEMs to stop developing cars to be BEVs and have to develop another version of a car to have an ICE engine, just in case the consumer is not ready to buy that BEV. What if they could only bet all their investment, all their R&D in developing a BEV car, but we could offer an alternative solution to put into that car? You all of a sudden, you eliminate all the problem of non-recovered investment and the fears that the OEMs have. I believe that's the way to go. And that's something we focus very much on.
That's fascinating because like we talk to OEMs all the time, to automakers all the time, who say like this is a really tough time because we have to invest very heavily into electrification and autonomy. We also need gas cars to pay the bills. And it looks like we're going to need new gas engines more than we thought we would. And so your solution is like just buy our engines because they're purpose made for that kind of transition. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's one of the ways to get there. And to be clear, we're not saying we're going to take the whole world of powertrains by storm. It's unrealistic. And quite honestly, the OEMs, they have some engines that they make in some particular markets where the volume is extremely high. They do have some of the latest generation. So by all means, keep doing it. If it's working, keep doing it. The idea here is exactly like you said. All the OEMs are going through such a tough time where they have to bring new products to the market. They have to focus on the so-called software-defined vehicles, which is, by the way, where they can bring value to the final consumer. That's where the consumer interacts in that car. That product can be made different, can be a differentiator. I would argue that except for very, very high performance V8s and those types of cars, sports cars and things like that, is the engine really a differentiator? Is that something that the consumer really cares? What kind of engine and then who is manufacturing that engine? I'd say no. So the proposition here is to tell the OEMs, where it's working, great. But where you found yourself now with this change of winds here, you find that maybe you don't have a hybrid technology that you need, or maybe you don't have it localized in a region that you need it localized, given all the tariffs and all the challenges of today. In those particular cases where you have a gap, come to us and we can help you.
You know, this reminds me of the thesis that Sergio Marchionne, you know, the late CEO of Fiat Chrysler, the same thesis he had, right? It was like, how many engines in the world are these, you know, 2-liter or 1.5 liter turbo engines for just everyday cars? And they all kind of drive the same. They're not special or distinctive, really. So like, why don't we consolidate and save, you know, ICE, you know, for the really specialized stuff, right? So it sounds like you're kind of delivering on a version of that thesis in some ways, too.
I would completely agree with you. The question that sometimes I get, which it's a great question. People think, it's a tough question. I'm going to be afraid of that question is, but can't the OEMs do it themselves, Matthias? And my answer to that is, yeah, absolutely they can. They've been developing, manufacturing, launching their own engines for decades. So can't they now double down, continue to focus on EVs and now put all the resources, all the money, all the engineers to develop their next generation hybrids? Yes, they can. Is that the most efficient way to do it? And does that bring the best value for them? I would argue not necessarily. So we're here as a unique consolidator that have technologies, latest and greatest technologies to support them so that they don't have to do it and they can put their effort where they can create the biggest value.
Let's talk about these engines from an engineering perspective, too. What makes them special in your eyes, the ones that are designed for EV and hybrid use? Like, I know this, like, for one, these are very small motors we're talking about. Like, you're not getting into the Hemi business, it looks like. So what makes them special?
Well, we have a full range. You're right. We have from 1.0 liter, three-cylinder, 50, 60 kilowatt power engines, which we continue to work, pure ICE, which we continue to work to make more and more efficient. That means thermal performance, BTE. You see a lot of that discussion taking place, especially in China. They put a lot of focus on thermal performance and fuel savings. And we have the state-of-the-art engines. We're number one, the best thermal performance that exists in the world are the engines that we produce. And we're now even pushing the limits. People talk about 45, 46% thermal performance. We have developments to cross that 50% barrier in the future, which a lot of powertrain engineers until not so long ago would tell you it's physically impossible to achieve. It's not. Mm-hmm. So on one hand, we focus on continue advanced base powertrain technologies. On the other hand, we also work on the integration of traditional powertrains with all the electronics, with the e-motors, with the inverters and converters, and with all of that to make them smaller, compact, but also powerful. Our range goes from those 1.0 liter three cylinders all the way to high-performing 2.0 liter four cylinders that, quite frankly, have better performance and better power than a lot of old V6 engines. So that's where, even though you're correct in saying that we don't get at this point into the big, big, large engines, but in terms of power coverage of the engines that we have, again, we can cover more than 80% of the market needs from the start before our new innovations that we're bringing on in the future.
Very interesting. And let's talk about the integration of these engines with EV powertrains to create hybrids and EREVs. I mean, first of all, I'd love to get your take on what the difference between the two is, because I feel like, you know, extended range EVs in theory should be an electric vehicle with a gas engine mounted on top of it. But the line between that and a hybrid is unclear. So besides that, just tell me about like how you're integrating these engines into EVs and like what that means for the market moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. That's my favorite part as well, because I think that this is what's going to make the breakthrough in terms of our acceleration towards net zero. Because imagine if we can, I was talking about that other half of the vehicles in 2040 that right now would still have some sort of an engine. If we can make those significantly more efficient, then we're really accelerating the decarbonization of the industry and how to make them more efficient. One way, you mentioned range extenders are very popular in China. They're starting to get a lot of traction in the U.S., and I think Europe will follow as well. That's simply a fabulous way of completely solving the range anxiety concern that exists for adoption, for more and more adoption of vehicles that are built on an EV architecture. And what we do in particular, range extenders have been around for quite a while, but they have been, in my opinion, executed perhaps not in the best way. Typically, they come from existing normal type engines, just put it in a vehicle, occupying quite a lot of space in the vehicle,
yeah,
and running inefficiently to charge the battery.
Like whatever V6 or four cylinder you have off the shelf, just toss that in there, call it a day, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I say, if you have ever driven one of those cars, it's not the most fun to do it, because you can hear the sound. It's very annoying. Yeah. And you have no connection between that sound that you hear and the behavior of the car. It's a strange experience. What we focus on doing is to develop super, super ultra compact, yet powerful range extenders. We just unveiled one of those at the Munich Auto Show a couple weeks ago. We call the C15 yeah. Compact Range Extender. And what this is a very quiet, very high performing range extender developed to fit in the same area where the battery is. So you can reduce the size of the battery, put that range extender in there. You're not stealing any other space around the vehicle. It operates at an absolutely perfect RPM just to charge the battery, and he has electronic controls to do that in certain conditions to make it completely invisible and imperceptible to the driver. So the driver gets to have their full EV experience while completely solving the range anxiety issue that we have today. And by the way, we can power in some regions that are ready for that. For example, in South America and Brazil, we can power those range extenders with clean fuels like ethanol. And that particular example, Patrick, a range extender powered by ethanol in that particular configuration, it's actually cleaner on life cycle emissions than a BEV itself compared to the energy that is necessary to charge a full battery electric vehicle. So it's also today
over lifetime, you're claiming.
Lifetime, correct. In coal, for example, in coal heavy regions, because that energy that you're using to charge the battery, which is for a full battery electric vehicle, is quite a lot of energy. If that's not coming from renewables, from clean energy, people forget there is a level of emissions there. Even if the tailpipe emissions is zero, there are emissions associated with that. And in that particular example, our range extender powered by ethanol is cleaner than a BEV.
Very, very interesting. And just, tell me about how I think you said something interesting earlier about like these engines are designing for range extender use. Like these are lower RPM, like just how is their performance and behavior going to differ from like a four cylinder in any gas car? I'd add to that too. Are their CO2 emissions lower than a gas car would be otherwise when they're in their range extender duty?
100%, absolutely. The trick with not just trying to plug a regular engine and make that a range extender, but you develop the technology. It's all about technology. It's all about innovation, as we all know, Patrick. That's the way to go. And when you develop something that you know that doesn't have to be connected to the transmission, so the sole purpose of that engine is to function in an optimal way and charge the battery, you can eliminate components, you can make it smaller, you can make it quieter, and you can focus on that RPM level that you're going to have to run in order to deliver the best performance there. You don't have to worry about torque. You don't have to worry about, the shifting gears and all of that. And that's how you make that the most efficient and the quieter. Having that said, you asked me about the hybrid developed for EVs, which is completely different now from the range extender, and that's something that we're very excited about because again we unveiled the generation 2 of our future hybrid system, as we call it. The first time we unveiled that was earlier in the year in Shanghai, in the Auto Shanghai, and then in Munich we're already at 2.0 version. And this is now a full hybrid system. It can operate as a range extender as well, but it can also, depending on how you build the configuration, be connected to the wheel. So now we're talking about a real plug-in hybrid, but that is developed for a BEV. So it's built from the ground up. So in a BEV today, we already have the motors, the e-motors and the clutches, the EDM, as some call, connected to the wheels in the front. And imagine putting on top of that an engine, an IC engine, but build in the same housing, build as one piece, as one compact piece from the ground up to be installed in a BEV with very minimum to no changes required in the vehicle architecture. You would never be able to install a regular ICE engine there because there's no space in the so-called frunk of an EV vehicle. But with this system, this system, you can.
Super interesting. And let's talk about EREVs, because do you think this is the future of electric vehicles? And is it primarily bigger vehicles we're talking about, like SUVs, trucks, things like that? Or is EREV applications, they might be kind of everything at some point?
I don't believe it's going to be everything. This is why I was talking about this a future hybrid system. I think the future hybrid system is really the innovative way of building multi-energy vehicles in the future, so that you can, if you're when we're designing together with OEMs, and we're doing this right now in a few cases, when you work from the beginning, from the inception of the new vehicles, you can design it already in that way where, like I said, it's going to be just one car running in one assembly line, which maximizes immensely the capital return for the OEM. But that car will have, just like today, you have a car running in an assembly line. And until now, I'd say electric power steering is 98%, is probably almost standard around the world. But I remember when electric power steering was also a feature. And you didn't have, the OEMs didn't have to run two lines, one for a car that was going to have an electric power steering, the other car that would have a manual steering. It was the same line, and they could assemble both in that same car, depending on what the customer need. Imagine doing the same with a battery electric vehicle or a hybrid system built for a battery electric vehicle. I think that's the way to go, but it's going to take time to get there. And while we get there, the EREVs, the range extenders, are a fabulous way to accomplish about the same thing, but in a much simpler integration mode.
Very interesting. And so what would you say to the critics, including folks who might listen to this podcast and are ardently pro EV, and they're going to be saying, you know, like, look, battery technology is advancing very quickly. Charging infrastructure is getting better than people realize. Like, we might get to a point where, like, ICE engines are irrelevant and we should go zero emission for the good of the planet. So, like, if considering the speed at which that's moving, like, do we need what you were doing?
Yeah. So first of all, I agree with everything that was said just now. So that's why I say a horsepower train, we're not anti-battery. It's quite the opposite. We are pro-transition on net zero. But we see that if we do nothing for that other 50% that will be there in 2040, and who knows when that 50% realistically can get to zero, if we only bet on EVs, how fast can we bring all the infrastructure? Can we upgrade the grid? Can we bring renewable energy to the grid? So what we decide to do is, instead of just being happy with that one path, we say, let's help accelerate it by creating alternatives for the other 50%. So first of all, we're all moving in the same direction. It's not one against the other here. The question is, even for the ones that believe that efficient hybrid technologies are still a bridge to that ultimate goal, my question to them would be, how long is that bridge? And shouldn't we be doing something to shorten the size of that bridge? And that's exactly what we're trying to do here.
Yeah, you know, now that I'm talking to you, I think about hybrid development, and it's, you know, aside from, you know, the really extreme examples like the Prius's Atkinson cycle engine, it tends to be like the battery side of hybrids gets the most attention, whereas the engine side, the gas burning CO2 generating side, it's like, oh, you know, it's the same motor we've always used or a smaller one, but you're rethinking that second part of that equation.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. I think we have to, the same, there's so much effort that has been put in, and I'm very grateful for that in the last 5 years. I was part of that journey as well. Before horsepower train, I was on the electrification side myself. And 5 years, 6 years ago, when many did not believe that EVs were going to be where they are today, I believed in it, and we believed in it, and we developed those technologies, and hundreds and billions of dollars were poured into preparing all the companies to develop those. But at the same time, nothing was done on hybrids. And you see a lot of cars today that have some really, really great engine solutions that were some of the best state-of-the-art engines in the past, but running on architectures that are 10 or 15 years old. Like I said, you really don't need a lot of the V6 engines that you have there. It's more of an emotional connection to it because the consumer wants to buy a car with a V6. From a pure engineer, I'm an engineer, I'm a technical guy, I'm a car lover. If you think from a pure engineering standpoint, we can deliver much better power, torque, at much more lower CO2 emissions and fuel consumption, by the way, with a four-cylinder 2.0 in place of those V6s. That's exactly what we want to do. We want to help bring the best and the newest technology in hybrids to the industry to help accelerate that transition.
You're talking about, you know, how many people are still going to be running gas engines of some form, you know, into the 2050s. Like, which markets are you talking about specifically? Is this like a developing world, like Africa, Latin America thing? Or are you talking about everywhere? Like, what do you think of in terms of geography?
Definitely all of those that you mentioned. So the southern part of the world where the challenges of EV infrastructure, customer acceptance, customer affordability. Let's talk about that as well. Yeah. When will EVs be available at a very, very competitive level that in those regions, people can afford buying those EVs and they can afford installing the charging structure that they will need and so on and so forth. So definitely that the South. But I think that there is a space for alternative energy everywhere in the world. The U.S. is a great example. It's the third largest market in the world. And I think that well into the 2050s, we're not going to see EVs becoming predominant. China is the fastest growing market for EVs. But let me tell you, last year, for the first time ever since the beginning of electrification, plug-in hybrids and EREVs grew faster in China than BEVs. So yeah. If China has served as anything but an example of the development of technology for us, we don't need to go too far and just look at the trend coming from China to come to the conclusion that this is going to happen everywhere.
Yeah, it seems like in China, once you get outside of the major urban areas, the electrification drops off and people tend to depend more on plug-in hybrids and EREVs out there. That seems to be the trend, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But back to that, to those EV lovers. One of my favorite things about what we're trying to do, which is to build hybrid solutions to put into a EV, is that would enable the OEMs to attract more and more people to those EVs that today they're not willing to come. Because whatever reason, they have some fear. Maybe they still are attached to having an engine. So imagine tomorrow, if instead of having to go to the dealer and say, I kind of like this car, do I buy the BEV version or do I buy the hybrid version? I'm not quite ready for BEV. I'm going to buy the hybrid version. In the future, you can buy, it's just one car. You're going to get into that car. And by the way, that car has a plug. So that person that's not ready to go full BEV, but still bought that hybrid vehicle will now get to experience what is it to drive an EV? What is it to charge an EV? And you start to see that, you know what? That's really cool. I don't want to go back. That particular customer on his next purchase might be a full BEV embracer already. So again, it's part of that mission of bringing more people to an EV-type car, and with that, accelerate the transition.
Matias, this has been such a great chat. I really appreciate your time today. My last question for you is, you know, what's next for Horsepower Train in the near term? Like, where will we see these engines deployed and when?
So you see them already every day in the road vehicles that we equip, whether it's a Renault brand vehicles, Geely vehicles, every Volvo car on the roads in the U.S., XC90s, XC60s, they all have our technologies today. We have publicly announced not so long ago that we have our first cooperation with Mercedes-Benz and some of their cars as well. That's coming to the road this year already, and you're going to see more and more coming. Unfortunately, I can't say the names yet, but it's super exciting. We have a very strong presence in Europe and in Asia already. But I just came back from the U.S. because we have great talks in the U.S. I'm looking at expanding the business with local manufacturing. We know that's really important for the U.S. market. So hopefully you will see us on the U.S. streets pretty soon as well.
Very interesting. And I'm really excited to see where you guys go next. So please keep us posted. Matias Giannini, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
All right. That was a great chat. Thanks again, Matias. Now it's time for Plus Minus, our segment where we talk about who's up and who's down in the EV world. Tim, who you got this week?
I have a minus, and it's Tesla. So Tesla's Q3 numbers came out today. Have you really? Tesla's third quarter numbers came out today. Actually, the earnings call was kind of happening as we record this, so we couldn't really cover it. But while revenue was up and deliveries hit a new record last quarter, they sold almost 500,000 cars last quarter, their profit was still 37% down from the same quarter last year, even with that big Q3, everybody running for the tax credit bonanza for EV sales. Tesla's profits not rising much with that. They only went up $200 million over Q2. So it's been a tough year for Tesla, and Q3, even with all that, even with all those sales, still tough.
Yeah, the extra costs were R&D projects, tariffs, of course, and no more regulatory credits, which like gave them billions of dollars in revenue for years. Like that system is gone now. So
Yeah, and also big increases in operating expenses and big increases in operating expenditures, and they had some restructuring expenses that they didn't break out specifically, but that's what led to the lower profits.
Yeah, I think Q4 is going to be really interesting for Tesla, because then, you know, they're well past tax credits, and we're gonna see what like actual demand looks like. On a more positive note, I'm going to close with a plus this week, and it's Uber. Uber is now offering grants of up to $4,000 to get its drivers to dump their gas cars and go with EVs, which is really cool. Uber has said it wants to be completely carbon neutral in North America and Europe by 2030. It's like in this country, like that's or this region, that's tough to do. And it wants to be like totally carbon neutral in all its global markets by 2040. So it's kind of helping to subsidize that a little bit. And I say good for them. I think that's really rad, like especially for the miles that are driven. Like EVs make a great case for that kind of work. I almost always order Uber Green when I get an Uber, just because I'm that insufferable person now.
Fancy.
I know. And also, it's called Uber Electric now, which is more simple than Uber Green. So good for them. The funny thing about Uber Green also, too, is like every time I would get one, like 90% of the time in New York, it's like a RAV4 hybrid. And it's like, which is also like every New York City taxi. So it's like you're expecting like, you know, a Cadillac Lyric, or I don't know, like a Taycan or something sweet. It's like it's just another hybrid Toyota, like every other car in New York is these days. Well, thanks as always for listening to the Plugged In podcast from Inside EVs. We'll be back next Friday. Today's show was produced by Michael Perkins and brought to you by the Motorsport Network.
Make sure to follow us wherever you get your podcasts, subscribe to the Inside EVs YouTube channel, and check out all our EV coverage on InsideEVs.com. See you next time.